Accession number 30907, reel 5.
So you were much happier on the Victorious? Than
very much happier, yeah, yes.
And you're still a sub-lieutenant?
Still a sub-lieutenant, yes.
Where did the Victorious go on this particular...
We went down to the Mediterranean. Where else did we go to? Back to America, I think. Yes, we did. And so it was a very happy commission, that was, because I enjoy working with the aircraft side of it. And, of course, if I wasn't on watch or not required, I could always go to... Although they did not encourage it, but you could go up onto the... near the bridge area and watch the aircraft take off and land. But it's very noisy, of course. And being in the operations room, you knew exactly what was going on. If there was a problem with the aircraft, you'd probably hear it on the radio, so you knew what difficulties the pilot may have had.
Did you ever see any aircraft get into real difficulty?
Oh, I saw about four ditch, yes.
Well, in the water?
Yeah, well, yes.
How did that happen then?
Just something happened on top. I don't know the technical details, but they were launched and just went straight off the end into the sea. So obviously something
was
went
on takeoff rather than
on takeoff.
Landing,
yeah. I didn't see any accidents on landing, although on one occasion the senior observer, a second pilot, a sub lieutenant, and the air crewman, they ditched and all got lost. They were lost. One of the advantages of being a helicopter controller for a squadron is if they want to work from an RFA, that's a Royal Fleet Auxiliary Tanker, for example, who had a flight deck, we'd fly across there and work from the tanker. It made it totally different because you've got a nice quiet cabin on these tankers. It's a merchant ship, of course. Well, not of course, but it's more a merchant ship lines. And a very quiet cabin and just a few of
them. So what effect would it have on a warship when... you lose one of your crew. Does it affect them?
It does, yes. Especially when you lose a senior pilot, senior observer, and another pilot and the air crewman in one fell swoop. Yes, it just ditched. I don't know the answer why it ditched. Someone did say that it was engine failure, and only having one engine, you can't afford to have an engine failure.
And they never recovered the bodies, I guess.
I don't think so. No, too deep water.
Did they have a ceremony on board after?
Oh, yes, there would be a service for them. Earliest opportunity, yes. Yeah. The other amusing, not amusing, but it is now, one helicopter, we're working with Australians. Oh, went down to Australia, of course, that's what I should have said, went down there to Australia. We're working with the Australian fleet, and a helicopter went into the hover, and something happened, and he couldn't move. He could go up and come down a bit, but it couldn't go forwards or backwards, and that caused a bit of a problem for him to get. So what happened, the ship, he got up to a certain height, the ship came underneath and slopped, and then he went down and he landed quite safely. But it must have been two of the crew jumped out before that happened, just to be safe. So they jumped out. It was a fairly low, about 60 foot. They jumped out with life jackets, which they inflated after hitting the water, and that was an interesting scene.
So how many officers would you have had on a ship like the Victorious?
Ooh, we're talking now about 30-ish, I should have thought, 25.
A large wardroom.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And, of course, would you have had a gun room on there with midshipmen?
Oh, yes, no gun room as such, but the midshipmen are on board there, yes.
They messed on their own, did they?
Oh, yes. No, sorry, the midshipmen dined in the main wardroom. I think the gunroom bit had gone by then.
Yes.
They're all naval officers.
So they were part of the wardroom. What was the name of your captain on board there? Can you remember?
No, he passed away last year. He lived at Elverstoke. I really can't remember offhand. It'll come to him in a moment, I hope.
Yes.
Ian, he's an Australian chap, a captain. Ian, sorry, I can't remember.
No, you'll remember in a minute.
Yeah.
So...
after the Victorious, and that was my second current sea job at sea, as was indicated during my training at Greenwich, I was appointed to HMS Dryad in the helicopter control section. This was about a year, and I was instructing classes and officers' classes in some of the aspects of helicopter controlling, because most ships, of course, in those days had a helicopter attached to them, and that was in Dryad. I had what was known as a bit of a pierhead jump after 1 year. I was appointed to HMS Daney, another frigate. She was out in Singapore at the time, and unfortunately, the officer I was relieving, his wife was seriously ill, And so he was flown home, and I was invited to go out to Singapore and join the ship as a helicopter controller.
So you were still a sub-lieutenant at this stage, were you?
I'm still a sub-lieutenant, yes.
Okay, okay. So you joined the ship. What kind of a ship was it?
She's a frigate. Now, this captain was Captain Darby George. He lives in the Western Isles. Lived, I think he still is. Still lives in the Western Isles of Scotland. Captain Darby George. Right, so there we are on Dainey, and we did some lovely cruises again from Singapore, Hong Kong, of course, and we went to some of the islands around the area, and it was decided, as I joined the ship halfway through the commission, I'd only stayed out there about 10 months or so, and then the ship came home, and we came home via Cape Town and then up to Portsmouth from there.
So this was your third ship as a Royal Naval officer?
Yes.
So you are now comfortable in the role, I guess?
Oh, yes, yes.
And your responsibilities, apart from helicopter officer, your day-to-day responsibilities on the Dainey was what?
Yes.
Divisional officer?
Divisional officer. I was boats officer, assistant wine caterer, assistant CP officer. The confidential books, all those jobs, which was all again part of my learning curve. You know, learned all these particular tasks that are undertaken by officers, which the crew, of course, might be aware of it, but I doubt it. They didn't realise there was a man on board who was a wine caterer and assistant wine caterer and that sort of thing. I got an interesting about the helicopter on the Dainey, off of South Africa. This is the days of apartheid, and we were not supposed to be seen working with the with the South African people, Navy. We did. We went to sea at 8 o'clock in the morning, over the horizon. 9 o'clock, the South African ships came out. They went across the horizon. We all met up, had a lovely exercise together. And on one of those exercises, unfortunately, our helicopter ditched. I was talking to the pilot at the time when he ditched, so we knew exactly where it was. He was on the radar scope. So we knew exactly where it was, and very quickly we were there. We rigged up a jury derrick and attempted to lift a helicopter in the water, which we did. But as you can imagine, the blades were all buckled and bent. No one was seriously injured in that accident. And we got back into Simonstown, and the South African people came on board in it. You know, didn't make a big issue of it, but said, any stores that went down with the aircraft. Yes, yeah, so the South African team came on board and discussed, you know, with us that was there any piece of equipment that went down with the helicopter, which you lost forever, sort of thing, because it's very deep water it went into. And we was able to top up their helicopter. It came and landed on board us, over the horizon, of course. Come on board, topped up with all the gear that we were alleged to have lost, and the observer of that particular helicopter, because they had overloaded it, had to stay on board with us, and we took it back into Simonstown, no problem, and the helicopter flew back with some of the equipment which we were alleged to have lost on that particular.
When you talked about the loss of this helicopter, you talked about a jury rig where you were able to recover a part of it.
Yeah, we've got the whole lot back.
Yes.
Well, most of it, yes.
Yes. What do you mean by a jury rig? How does that work?
You've got all the facilities on board to make a sort of a temporary crane, I suppose you could call it. It's like a big pole, made of steel, of course, very strong. Put tackles on it, and then the crew can hoist away on the tackles and pull the helicopter out of the water. It probably would have gone on to a winch as well, because we had a winch on the quarterdeck, and so it came up by winch onto the quarterdeck. And the other amusing thing is that as we were leaving Singapore to come home on that occasion, prior to it ditching, the pilot came up to the bridge with a signal which he wanted the captain to release for him, saying, "With regret, I've left my two doors back in Singapore." And he got the doors. So he was flying around without any doors. That's okay out in the Far East. When he ditched at South Africa, he was still flying around with no doors. When we got home, there were two doors waiting for us on the jetty. But no helicopter. Well, Ben's helicopter.
So you got back to Portsmouth on yes. Saints?
Yes. The Daney.
Yes. Sorry,
the and Daney. During that time, I took a decision by myself that I would like to take early retirement. So I did write to the captain asking for their lords, the commissioners, to accept my application to retire at a future date. Early retirement.
Right. So what happened after leaving the Daney?
After leaving the Daney, back to Dryad, and by then I'd had confirmation that I would be, I have been accepted for voluntary retirement on a full pension, etc., etc., although I'd only be 37 then.
You were still a sub-lieutenant?
No, lieutenant by now, sorry.
Where were you promoted?
On the Daney. Okay. On the Daney. So in fact, we're back in UK waters, because it's in Devonport. When a signal came in, I'd been promoted to lieutenant.
Right.
I never had a lieutenant's uniform. The supply officer was a lieutenant. He said, borrow my jacket. So I borrowed his jacket for a few days until I had a jacket made for me.
Yes. So that was a cause for celebration on board,
oh,
I guess.
Oh, it certainly was, yes.
What made you decide to take early retirement?
Well, the Navy, of course, were getting very involved with... Yes. The Navy at that stage were getting very modern with their equipment, electrical items, etc., etc., and new radar systems coming and being, new sonar systems. The whole lot was new and changing. And I thought, well, here is an opportunity, because I now had reached the age where my pension would not be affected. I would get the pension for as if I was 40-something of age. And so I got the response, yes, you can retire at that time. And I went to Dryad for the last month or so before actual retirement. It was during that time in Dryad that, because I now had volunteered to resign early, or retire early, I should say, I was given all the spare jobs that no one else wanted. For example, street lining in London. What else did we have? Seamanship boards down at the seamanship school. All the things which I enjoyed, but it was all the sort of job no one else wanted. And here's a guy who's going to leave the Navy anyway. Let him have it. And I'm sure he can't complain anyway. So that was it. And that's my last. And I retired December 31st, 1971. I was dined out at Dryad, and I dined out on the Daney, etc. So
when you your last day, can you recall your last day in the service?
Last day, yes, it was a bit of nothing really. I was told to hand in your ID card. I went to the supply officer's cabin or office to hand in. He wasn't there. He'd gone on a half day or something, so I just left it with Wren, who was his secretary or something. Left it there. It's all a bit after all those 22-year service. You thought, well. You'd have thought someone would have waited to say, well, thank you very much, you know, but no. But I had a letter from the Queen, though, a standard letter, thanking me for my loyal service. And
so you left the Royal Navy. Where was your family living at this time?
We're then in Portsmouth.
Right. So you went there as a civilian?
Yes, yes.
Did you make any decisions as to your future then?
Oh, yes. Well, before I left the Navy, I thought, well, what can I do when I retire? And going back to Belfast days, we actually I was not on the welfare committee, but the welfare committee on Belfast decided to support a family in Hong Kong. And I think we bought them a house or some hut or some house anyway, and made sure they were well looked after all the time we were in Hong Kong. I thought that perhaps would appeal to me. So I came back home, applied to join the probation service, but was not accepted. Someone else... beat me to it. So I applied to join the social services, went to London for 2 years at North London Polytechnic, and 1 year in London, 1 year back here, but going up to London on the odd occasion, and became a qualified social worker. And again, I enjoyed that. But after a few years, I was a bit concerned that my reports to the court were not always being implemented. For example, as I was working with, at times, with young people, you know, say young 13, 14, 15-year-olds, vandals and that sort of thing, I put in Borstal. My recommendation would be Borstal, some of those lines, but they were never accepted. I was sent for on one occasion, you're too harsh, you've got to tone it down a bit, you're not the Navy anymore, you're in civilian life, you're not Navy, you don't treat people like that anymore. If they misbehave, yes, give them a chance, but once they've had that one chance, give them another chance. And I said, that's not my scene. I'll give them a chance, yes, of course I did, but if they misbehaved yet again, then that was it. My report went into the court, and that some form of harsh treatment is training is required for this young man and girls. They were just as bad, and so I thought, well, this is not what I really wanted to be. I want to be someone who's trying to help people, but they were not accepting that. Not all of them were accepting the help. I was invited to reconsider my options, and I said, well, I'll go and join the inspectorate department, which I did, and I became an inspector for rest homes in Hampshire. And that's,
so how long were you doing that job?
Social survey, 19 years all overall. I came out of there because they regraded my position, and that meant I was on my way out, and I went and saw them in Winchester and discussed this with the people to be in Winchester, and they said, no, that's not the case, we're just having a reorganisation, so you're not losing your job. And I said, well, what happens? Do I just stay where I am? Oh no, we're going to make a public note, you know, public thing for appointments, and your job will be listed. I said, no, they don't want me. No, we're not saying that, they said. We're not saying we don't want you. But anyway, they had a chap to be interviewed. I got on quite well with him, and he got my old job. I took early retirement. But prior to going into early retirement, I said to the powers-to-be, look, what happens to me? Well, you go back as a social worker. We'll protect your salary. I said, no, I'm not going back to social work. I came out of social work as such because I couldn't accept what the courts were doing. And they said, okay, well, the only option is to make you redundant. I said, yes, I'll go redundant. And then what's my pension going to be? Oh, we'll give you enhanced years then. We'll give you 4.5 years enhancement. That made me up to 65. I said, right, done. So it's 59 years of age. I was on a 65-year-old pension and a part-time. Sorry, then I went back to my old office, part-time.
Right. So all this came to an end when you were how old?
65.
So you were part-time until you were 65.
Yeah. From 59 to 65, right. I was part-time.
Okay.
On a protected salary and et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. Yeah. After retirement, did you have any connections with the Navy at all?
Yes. I mean, I'm this year, in fact, this, of course, this year being 2007, I've now done chairman of the Retired Officers Association in Portsmouth for 7 years. This is my seventh year. And the AGM, which will be taking place in May 2007, I have given them a year's notice. I am standing down as a chairman. I remain in the association, but not as chairman.
Right.
And the rules state quite clearly, I have to become vice chairman for a year. Well, I don't particularly worry about that.
And going back to your earlier days of the Navy, HMS St Vincent, do you have any contact with any of the other boys that were in St Vincent?
None at all. I always look at the St Vincent magazines for new members. I've never, ever seen anyone of my class mentioned.
But you do have a contact with the St Vincent as a whole association?
Yeah, well through the magazines, yes.
So you belong to an association?
Yeah, right? Yes, yeah.
Yes.
And with us, St Vincent, I was, when it started up in inaugural days, I was their welfare officer for about 4 or 5 years, I think it was.
Do you belong to any other naval associations at all?
Oh, well, apart from the Naval Officers, Retired Officers Association, I do guiding on HMS Warrior, which is moored in the dockyard.
Right. And any other ships that you were on that you're associated
with? Oh, yes, yes. And of course, HMS Belfast. I'm a member of their association. I'm kept in touch regularly with what goes on aboard there, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so that keeps me much in touch with the Navy.
Right. So, and at the moment, you're busy, you say, with your guide duties on HMS Warrior.
Yes.
So you must meet a lot of people doing
that. There'll be lots of people in there. You meet some of the old film stars come down there, and et cetera. Lots of... Princess Alexandra's been down on 3 or 4 occasions, and I'll see her. She always speaks to me, not personally, she does speak to me personally, but she also talks to everyone else who she sees, yes.
Mark and Reed, thank you very much for a very interesting interview. Thank you.